In our meditation, we try to be present, mindful. However, we want to express that. And we discover that, in a sense, we are very little present. Which means that we are absent. And I wonder, where are we when we are absent? If we want to find ourselves back, it's better to know where we are when we are not here, so that we know where to look for ourselves. So where are we when we are not present? And it is true that no one is leaving the meditation hall, so it's not that people are not present because they are out. So it is a very strange situation that everyone is here, yet if we were checking the quality of presence, there would be not many people here. Neither would I be here also. So most of the time there would be nearly no one in this hall. So I think that's an interesting question. So where are we when we are not present? We know it doesn't mean that we disappear physically. So what's happening? We cannot disappear physically. That would be clear if we went out. There'd be no doubt about that. So how do we do that? How is it possible for us to be, in a sense, present, because we can never be where we are not, yet being absent? How do we do that? So then when we try to be present, mindful, we, in a sense, understand a little bit where we are hiding, so to speak. So I wonder, where are the places where we can hide? I think in one book of Martin Buber, starting by saying that God asked to Adam, he said, where are you? And he certainly knows that God doesn't know where Adam is, but he is asking this question because Adam is hiding from himself. He doesn't know where he is. So he could ask ourselves this question, so where am I? And to easily answer there, seated in my cushion, will be not enough. So in a sense, how we can be here and not be present? So in our meditation, we try to do something which is a little bit ambiguous. We try to be present. However, it is completely impossible not to be present. So we try to do the only thing that it is only possible to do, to be doing it. So I would like to explore tonight, where are we when we are not present? Or mindful, we'll see which word we can use. So using the term present mean, in a sense, is linked with the temporality. And we know that we can sometimes be lost in past and future. So one easy answer will be, when I am not present, I'm lost in past and future. And that certainly is something that can happen. Although it is also true that we don't disappear in the past, we don't disappear in the future. It's only through our imagination. We are still here, thinking about the past, and here thinking about the future, now. Yet we have the sense of being lost in past and future. And this being lost in past and future does not depend only on notion of time. I don't need to think about yesterday or tomorrow. Just memories of something that I place in the past is enough for me to feel that I am in the past. Or anticipation of something that may happen in the future, project me in the future. So in this sense, we are in an imaginary world, not in touch with ourselves. We are in this strange world, fascinating world sometimes of imagination. But the notion of time and temporality also is there, even when we don't think about the past or imagine the future, only when we want to transform our experience, to change something. There's slight sleepiness, I try to get rid of sleepiness. There's a slight pain, I want to get rid of that. It means at this time, what I have in mind something which is not present. I have in mind a similar experience, but slightly improved. So this anticipation, this wish to transform, to change, please mean the future. It's not possible to transform without time. We need time to transform, even a very short time. So as soon as we wish to transform, to improve, we are jumping into temporality. And then we cannot be in touch with what is there. So we may say we are lost in past and future, and sometimes also a certain aspect of future that is implied in our attempt to transform, to improve. And we try to transform and improve, then we miss what is here. We miss the actuality of the experience. We don't want to deal with that. We want to deal with something else which is not here. Now, it doesn't mean that in the notion of temporality, there's past, there's future, and there's present. It doesn't mean that we become a club that is only worshipping the present. So that we try to hold on to and give a specific value to the present. Because the present is also a notion of temporality. So as soon as we cling to something as happening now in the present, we make also a concept. When we are and just mindful, just in the experience that we are going to try to describe that, there is no notion of temporality. There's just this experience that we are aware of. So it is important, although we use a lot present, or I use a lot present presence, doesn't mean that we make an issue of the present or presence, as sometimes it seems to appear in some books, or that suddenly the present is an end in itself. It's just we use that because it already help us not to cling to past and future as a skillful tool, but not as a overvaluation of the present. But a question arises, would it be possible not to be present, mindful, yet not being lost in past and future? Or if you like, is it possible to be lost in the present, when there is no notion of past and future, even no attempt to transform or to improve? So in this context, we will not speak so much about past, future, and present. We'll oppose present and presence and absence. Is it possible to be absent, yet not being absent in the past and future? So absent, being absent, mean being outside. That's what absent mean, outside, out of. So we may wonder when we are absent in our meditation, out of what are we? As we mentioned, not out of the meditation hall. So out of what are we when we are absent? We could express that in a saying that most of the time we are, as I said, absent mean out of, so most of the time we're in exile. Spend our time being in exile, looking for the promised land. But it is not that we are outside of our home or homeland. We are in exile in our own homeland, in the promised land, because we don't recognize it and we're in exile. So it is a quite strange situation to be in exile in one's own homeland. And then it also make it difficult, because when one is in exile in one's homeland, there is no promised land where we can go to, because we're already there. And you know that when we try in our meditation to reach, to find it, or to be present, when presence start to be an aim, it makes it difficult, because an aim is always in the future. So if we make, of being present, we make it an aim, so we just make it impossible. So how come that we're in exile in our own homeland? Very interesting situation and strange situation. It is just because we don't know that we're in our homeland. We don't know, we don't recognize it. And therefore, we feel that we're in exile. Why we don't know that we are already in our homeland, which means we are already in this quality of presence that we can never escape from. How come that we don't know? We don't know it because we know too much something else. There's so much knowing of something else that does not leave room or space for knowing where we are, knowing that we are in our own homeland. So what do we know? Or what does knowing mean? Knowing mean in the sense to translate an experience into concept so that we can keep it, we can organize it, we can transmit it. So when an experience is arising, we immediately conceptualize it, so we know it, can remember. An experience, if it is not conceptualized, we could not remember it. What we bring in our memory is like a duplication of an experience. When there is an experience, we make a concept of it, and that we can keep. And next day we can bring it back to memory. But the experience we cannot. If we could bring the experience, then we could just experience the past. I could bring the experience itself of the food I ate at lunch or whatever, or the nice swim I had in the sea. If I could experience it again, then we could move into temporality and re-experience the past. So what we can do, we can just take a picture of it, so to speak, and keep that in mind. And that's what the conceptualization is. We take a picture of that, we make a concept, and that we remember. So to know in this sense is to translate an experience into a concept that can be kept, organized. People have organized all the knowledge of the different plants in huge books, you know, in the birds and everything. We go to the library and you see huge encyclopedia with so much knowledge that had been gathered and organized there. So knowledge is always a translation of an experience. So, when I say we know to many things or too strongly so that we don't know that we are in a homeland. It means that we are concerned, fascinated by what we see. I go outside and I look at the trees, so I can be very fascinated by the trees, by the song of the birds, by anything else. So if I'm fascinated by that, what do I know? I know the tree, I know the song of the bird, I know maybe my thought about the organization of something for next week, I know very clearly. So this knowing that we bring, or our mind is always concerned with, is in a sense taking all the space of our experience, that there is no knowing where we are. I mean that there is no knowing of the mind itself, but only the knowing of the content. For us to know something, when seeing, when hearing, tasting, or even thinking, to know something, there is also an important dimension. We need to know that we are knowing. Otherwise, if we did not know that we are knowing something, the knowing or not knowing will be the same. If I know this kind of tree, but if I don't know that I am knowing it, and it's like if I did not know. So in any experience, there is the knowing of something, and there is also, to some extent, the knowing that we are knowing this thing. But you see, for the knowing of a tree, I need to know that I know the tree. Otherwise, this knowing is similar to a not knowing. But now, I know that I am knowing. But if this knowing is the same type, then I will need a third knowing to know that I am knowing, that I am knowing the tree. Which means that the knowing that I am knowing is a different type, is not a conceptualization. It is just a awareness, it is just the quality of consciousness itself, that it knows itself, is aware of itself, like the flame of a candle also is giving light to itself. It doesn't need another candle to see that this candle is lit, you know. Don't need that. The light of the candle is giving light to what is around, but to itself, because that is nature, is to be light. In the same sense, consciousness, awareness, by nature, is awareness. And for consciousness, to be aware and to be the same thing, is no two things. So the knowing that I know something is not conceptual, is not a knowing that is grasping at, is just being aware that I know. I'm being aware. I'm aware that I know the tree. I'm aware that I perceive the tree. I'm aware that I'm hearing the sound of the bird. And that in every experience, whatever it is, there is always this awareness that that we are perceiving, hearing, tasting, thinking. We can even not imagine that we could be completely unaware that we are seeing, tasting, or hearing, or thinking. So this awareness of knowing, it is awareness of consciousness in every experience, sometimes is very weak, so to speak, because all the energy is given to the object. If I am fascinated by the trees or by the song of the birds, I'm so much clinging, so interested in this, what is being heard, what is being known, that I'm not present, that I'm not aware, that I'm hearing, I'm not aware that I am seeing. So when we are absent, it's in our mind, in the same experience of being aware of hearing, being aware of seeing, tasting or hearing, we are in exile when we give too much importance, when we are lost, so to speak, or all the energy is in the content of the experience. then we are not aware that there is not this quality of presence in the experience. So we are always in exile in the world of object, of experiences, what we hear, what we taste, what we think about. So much that there is no space, no opening for being aware that there is knowing happening, that there is seeing happening, that there is hearing happening. So we are never out of ourselves. In the same experience of seeing, tasting, thinking, we are just giving too much importance to the content and not to the fact that we are being aware of seeing something, hearing something. So we're lost in the content. When we say we are lost in past and future, it's the same. We are lost because we cling to this content, the content of my memory here. If it is past, I cling to that. I'm not aware. But if I'm aware that I am remembering, now there's remembering, then I can be home, not in exile. I can be fully present in these memories because I don't give all the energy to memories, but to being aware of remembering. If I'm anticipating the future, I give all my energy to this anticipation, then I'm lost in the content. There is no space for energy, for being aware that I am anticipating the future. So it's not that I need suddenly to necessarily to stop the anticipation, but it is importance I'm giving. If I start to be aware that I'm thinking and anticipating, then I feel home. Then I can be aware. Then I can be present. In the meditation, we have suggested when there are a lot of thoughts, to be aware of the emotion. Sometimes thoughts are coming again and again of the same type, and they can be linked with past and future. So when we try to be aware of the emotion has a quality that is happening right now, and it is quite obvious. If I remember something of the past that make me sad, the memories are dealing with something past that may give me the illusion that I am in the past. But the emotion, the sadness, is happening right now. So it is a skillful way, by connecting to the emotion, to ground our experience in something much is clearer, less confusing. That is a way for us not to be lost with this sometimes fascination for past or for future. So we are never out, or we are never away. We are always here in our homeland, in the promised land. We just don't recognize it, because we are so much concerned with something different, something else. And this quality of being aware of seeing or hearing is what we call mindfulness. And in a sense, that what we are practicing. To be mindful is not to know sounds and even sensations or thoughts. To be mindful is this awareness that hearing is happening, there's hearing, there's tasting, there's thinking, feeling of emotion. I mean that there is a releasing of this fascination for the content of the experience, to be more aware of the experiencing itself, of the awareness experiencing itself. And this awareness experiencing itself is our being, our presence, which is, of course, here every instant, unless we are in a deep sleep, and then there is no problem at this time. So So some people are saying, well, I recognize, as we have said, you know, be aware of your emotion. Then some people say, yes, I'm aware, I recognize, there's sadness. And so what? It's still there, you know, or there's sleepiness, I recognize it, so something should happen, and it's still there. Or frustration, or boredom, I recognize, and it doesn't change. I don't see the value of it, it doesn't seem to be so interesting. Because here we are satisfied with knowing, giving it a name, but not with experiencing, not with this quality of mindfulness that is fully experiencing it. Being aware that one is experiencing, I can be lost in sadness. It's very clear, I will know that I am sad. If somebody say, what's happening? I know I'm sad. I will say, oh, that's strange, I'm sad. I know. It will be absurd to be sad and not knowing when you're sad, or to be happy and not knowing when he's happy. Not hidden. So I can know it, but fully experiencing it is different. To be completely aware. There's this quality of being aware of the experiencing in the sadness, in the joy, in the sleepiness. But if we are reacting against the experiencing, again, the sadness, sleepiness, or whatever experience, if we are resisting it, then we cannot be mindful. If you want something else, then we cannot be mindful. Because for the resisting of it, or the wishing something else, there is a way to hold to this experience, sadness, sleepiness, or whatever. We are holding it as an object, if you like. And then when we hold that as an object, it is not possible to experience it with intimacy. We are cutting ourselves, we are cutting from the possibility to be aware when we make a thing, an object of those experiences. And that is the case when there's aversion or desire for something else, or judgment about the experience. So that is why in our meditation beatitude is so important. As soon as there is resistance, you know, aversion or grasping, reaching out for something else, or conceptualization, a way to grasp this experience as being this or that, as soon as there is any of those three, we cannot be present, and if you like, we are in exile. Because this way of resisting means that we have made an object of that, and then we cannot have this quality of intimacy. So this is an important part of our meditation, to be aware of the quality of the mind meditating. So it is our main job, not so much to go deep into a physical sensation. That's fine if it's happened sometimes when the mind is certain, but it is really about being aware of the quality of the mind meditating. As soon as the mind is resisting, reaching out for something else, or grasping it in a way with a judgment, evaluation, then we cannot be mindful, we cannot be present. If you like, that is a way to be lost in the known, in what we know, and there is no quality of being present there. So we can only be really present or mindful if we are open to the situation. Now this openness to the situation is not a matter of resignation. And if I experience sadness and I got the instruction I should not resist, I should not try to change it, and so now I say, okay, I will stay with sadness, hopefully something will happen, and I'm I cannot change it and transform it. It's not allowed in meditation. So now, so I'm waiting, or even maybe sometimes being disheartened. You know, okay, that's my meditation. That's me. You know, this way or that way. You know. That's still a way to make it an object. That's still a way to grasp at it. That's still a way not to experience it. So resignation is not the proper attitude. It's still a way to resist the experience. So we could nearly sense it physically. We are resisting. Again, take the example of sadness. First, I know it is there, so I can name it, if you like, a sadness. Then I can also be aware that it is unpleasant. And maybe I don't like to experience it. There's aversion there. So being aware of the aversion, I'm not acting out the aversion. I recognize the presence of aversion, that's fine. But I'm not going to act it out because I have tried many times and I want to try something different. So that's fine, I don't like it. But what is this sadness actually? And then I start to resist less and open to the experiencing of it. And in this experiencing of it, I may experience it without any conceptualization. Now I want to bring another element there. It is that quite often this awareness of the experience, awareness of hearing, tasting, thinking, or the awareness of emotion, which is just consciousness, just being aware, we also make it into a thing. So we have this I and sad, I am sad. A way to make this awareness into an object, a thing, is by the concept I. Suddenly, I see, I hear. You see, there's just this awareness of seeing, this awareness of hearing, and now I make an object of it, I, the conceptualization, I, solidifying I see, I hear. And when that's happening, I cannot be intimate with the experience. This concept that I bring into the experience does not leave space for the intimacy with the experience. So as long as there is a sense of I in my meditation, hearing, tasting, or sad, and I'm sad, this is not mindfulness. Is only mindfulness where there's a fullness of the experience without any sense of I. Now it doesn't mean that something disappears. Sometimes when we speak about no sense of I, people start to worry, you know, why, where would I disappear? You know, no disappearance is just a sort of concept that is not brought into the experience. There's full consciousness. It's not a limitation when one is not identifying, on the contrary. There's a wholeness of the experience when one experiences hearing or tasting or sadness or anything. If one does not identify, one does not bring the concept I in the experience, there's a much more vastness, a fullness, and a freedom. Because the sense of I bring a limitation, condensation of the experience. So there's no practice of mindfulness if there's a sense of I, me. Doesn't mean that the experience of sadness or something like that is a universal. No, it is connected with each individual then when one is experiencing that. But just the sense of I, the concept of I, is not brought, not kept in the experience. So nothing is being lost, but a thought, a concept. And there's a sense of much vastness and completeness in the experience and freedom. Mindfulness is not the end or the aim of meditation, but it is really what allows wisdom and freedom to arise. So we don't need to look outside of the present experience. It's always exactly there, exactly with what's happening right now. Either I recognize it as a promised land, or I feel in exile. Something is lacking. And when something is lacking because I'm clinging too much to an object of an experience, a content of an experience, then there's a sense of fragmentation, limitation. A lack of fullness, a lack of wholeness. And then I may try to find this sense of wholeness in that. Try to find an object of desire. I want this or that, you know. That will fulfill me. And then one is going in a circle, you know, trying to reach out to find an object for satisfaction. But trying to find satisfaction or fullness, completeness in another object or another person. Then it cut ourselves from the fullness of our own being. There's more frustration, therefore we should have more desire, get more of this, more of that. So this sense of freedom that can be experienced in a clear mindfulness can be experienced at any time of our practice. Sometimes we feel that our practice is balanced and there's this quality, and sometimes we are resisting and it seems more difficult. But it's not between a wrong attitude and a right attitude, there's not a long distance. Sometimes the difference is so small, it's very small. And it happens sometimes in the practice when one has a wrong attitude, when persevere in this wrong attitude. It seems very difficult and hopeless. I will never make it. And for some reason, suddenly one has let go of this maybe forcing or clinging, and suddenly was in the right attitude. And it seems so clear, obvious, simple. So the distance is not very far. But it is important to check our attitude, because with the wrong attitude, we can practice for a long time. If we practice with the wrong attitude, then we are always going to fight and never find this sensitivity and quality in our meditation. So we can experience instead of proper mindfulness, a sense of freedom. I've spoken here about difficult experience, but it's the same with pleasant experience. I may in my meditation experience calmness, joy, clarity. And I may in the same way be lost in the content of the experience. I'm quite pleased with the calmness or the joy. Oh, that's nice, that's good. I hope it lasts to the end of the retreat. Or even if I don't elaborate that so much, I'm really happy that there's a sense of identifying, a sense of grasping at this experience. And in the same way, if I've been more intimate with this calmness or joy, I'm more intimate with that, suddenly the joy does not disappear. But then I experience freedom. And then I see very clearly it is different. A joy which is in a sense and clinging to it, which is a kind of subtle bondage, and a joy that is experienced without identification, that is freedom, is very different. So it is important when we have this quality of experience, sometimes of joy, calmness, also to check to see if we have the proper attitude or not. Because in a sense, it is easier at this time. Usually the motivation is less at this time. We like to enjoy a little bit. But it is still easier because the challenge is less strong to discover the proper disposition within the experience, so that there is no identification. We don't cling to this sense of I in the experience. Now one may wonder, but how is it possible, you know, to not to bring the sense of I in the experience? So one may try to get rid of it, you know, and that's even more difficult, you know, because who is trying to get rid of whom, you know? And we get into a difficult situation. It's not about getting rid of anything. It is about being more open, intimate with the experience. You know. Sutra, which is, in a sense, the ground for the practice of meditation that we're doing here, Satipatthana Sutra. Satipatthana means a close of mindfulness, means that we are very close to the experience, but so close to the experience that there is no distance. For example, with hearing, again, I hear the bird. An elaboration, they're quite complex, and in my meditation, then I just try to, just to be hearing. Okay, I don't know, I hear the bird, but just listening, and suddenly it's just hearing. And this hearing experience, everything is there, there's a sense of fullness, of completeness. And then if I reflect later on, I see there was no sense of I there. Not because I've pushed it away, but because I've tried to be closer to the experience. In tasting, it's the same. You know, tasting the food, you know, I'm tasting this or that, and then suddenly one tried to be just what is this experience of tasting. And in this instant, just in tasting, that's just tasting. When then we'll discover there was no one experiencing that. Nothing was missing, on the contrary. There was a fullness of experiencing it. One can also experience that in seeing. One turns one head around, you know. Not building an object seen. You know, if I'm outside, I see the park, and I turn my head in many ways, I see every time it's very different what I'm seeing. But I believe I'm seeing the same. I'm seeing the same object, which is a park. But my experience of seeing it is different every instant. So if I stay with the experience, not with my construction of what I'm seeing, which is normal, and we need that in daily life, no doubt. We are just trying to explore more, or with more intimacy, the experience itself. So I wouldn't seeing is happening exactly, let's say, in me, you know, seeing every instant. Another experience of seeing. And if I'm just in this seeing, there's just seeing. There's not I see this or that. It's just this seeing happening with a sense of completeness, of wholeness. Not of separation. So the practice of mindfulness is not a trying to get rid of. It's just being closer to the experience, more intimate to any experience. Same with let's come back to emotion. Same with the emotion. Sadness, and I am sad, it's painful, it's heavy, and I may even bring again and again the good reason I have to be sad. And then I try just to listen, so to speak, to the sadness. So sadness is like that. And physical dimension of sadness and the mental dimension of sadness. Sadness is this quality of mind. It's very interesting, you know, experiencing just sadness. Sadness is like that. You know. It's just sadness, nothing more, nothing less. You know. And when one finds the proper disposition within this emotion, sadness, it's not a problem anymore. One has not got rid of, one has not transformed it, one has found peace within the sadness. By being intimate with the experience. Not because one tried to get rid of something. So as it has been expressed many times by teacher of meditation, well known like Mahasi Sayadaw and others, why do we meditate? In order to not grasp. When we grasp as being this or that, then there's a limitation, then there's a tension there. In not grasp, it means just being experiencing. So this freedom that can be experienced within a difficult emotion, for example, this give us the sense of the freedom that is possible, that we don't need to get rid of all our difficulty in life in order finally to be fine. Most probably we'll never get to the end of difficulty in life, because there's always something different arising. And as we grow older, there's even new stuff arising. So dreaming that we'll be able suddenly to be free of any difficulties, you know, doesn't make sense. But it is rather to find freedom within the experience themselves. Then it doesn't matter whatever is happening, we can find freedom. Now this freedom that is found in mindfulness is not like enlightenment. Enlightenment would say that certainly a freedom, like ultimate freedom, when there is really something that is a belief, a strong belief in the self or something like that has completely been cut and does not appear anymore. It's something more definitive in what we call awakening. So in awakening there's certainly freedom, but any sense of freedom in our meditation is not necessarily awakening. But it gives us the sense of the practice, the possibility that the practice can bring. And I think when we start to experience that at time, then we trust that the practice has this possibility, this potentiality for us. It is not about making effort to control our mind so that our mind will become peaceful and stable. It's not about controlling. It's about dancing with all our experience, but being exactly right in the middle of the experience, at this heart of the experience where we don't cling to the experience, because we are close to it. We are at the heart of the experience, not because we keep at a distance. It does take practice. For most of us. Hope for you it does not take practice and it is more natural, but for those that is not so natural, we need to practice. I will be with you, because since I need a lot of practice, I will be with you in the practice. But I trust completely that this freedom can be experienced, and we can start to develop that. And from this mindfulness, then wisdom can arise.